Jacob, Jacob, Joe and Jacob. Agile monkeys play. Jacob, Jacob, Joe and Jacob. Agile, unpredictable Jacob.
Hello, Jacob listeners. Today we are honored to have with us Sandy Mamoli. Sandy is an internationally recognized agile coach, a co-author of Creating Great Teams, co-founder of Nomad 8. Sandy, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. Well, I must say that one of my first experiences when I moved to New Zealand about 8 years ago, when I was working for Orion Health, I could find so much, I think it was poker cards from Nomad 8 and some other materials, and everyone was talking about Nomad 8.
And the personal Kanban. Don't forget the personal Kanban.
Oh, yes. Well. Yep. Yeah.
We love our designers to make things nice.
Yeah, it's really funny. I think my first experience hearing your name was I was working at a company in Wellington called Boost, and your partner was one of our clients. And just sort of in passing, they mentioned that she's going to be excellent at doing Agile because her partner is one of the biggest, most well-known Agile people in New Zealand. And that was, I think that was within the first month of even knowing what Agile was. So from the very get-go, no pressure, I associated Sandy Mamoli with Agile in New Zealand. Mm. So you've been doing this for a bit of time. You've been working in the Agile community for a while. When can you give us a bit of a timeline on that?
First of all, I have to speak up in kind of defense of my partner, Brenda, because she had been working in Amsterdam together with me as a product owner in an Agile work context. So right. Not everything she knows about Agile is from me.
Well, she didn't actually say that. I think this was an assumption placed on her. So. Probably unfairly so.
I just don't want to end this podcast in divorce.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, I can. I'm happy to talk about how it all started and how we met and so on. And I do remember I have been working Agile since 2003 when I lived in Copenhagen, worked in Amsterdam and Stockholm. Oh, wow. And at the time, I thought this was completely normal.
Mm. So you were introduced to Agile as in like, this is just the way you do it in 2003.
Yeah. I had maybe 1 or 2 years of experience as a developer. Mm. I did not care about anything except for code. So
you were hardcore. That's awesome.
Yep. At the time I didn't even care about users just yet and what we're building, as long as I could
I can communicate to a computer. Who needs people?
Yeah, exactly. What I do remember at the times that the first thing that happened was I got Kent Beck's book into my hands, XP. And I was trying to run XP with a database team at Sony Ericsson. And I do remember how disappointed I was when someone decided we were going to run Scrum, because I really wanted to run XP. But that turned out to be okay. And I was still allowed to use all the technical practices. So that was cool.
Yep.
But what happened in 2006 was that I moved to New Zealand, and no one was doing Agile at the time.
Culture shock.
I'm sure there were some, there were some pockets, but I didn't know about them. And I had this huge culture shock, and I didn't know that at the time, but I had been living in a bubble. It's not like the rest of the world was Agile, and New Zealand was like decades behind. I had been living in a super progressive bubble where I had completely normalized working in an Agile way. And moving to New Zealand, I got this like shock of my life and decided there's no way I'm going to go back to your ways of working. Mm. I will just make my own thing. So I started to influence the teams I was working with and started creating teams that worked Agile. That was around 2006, 2007. Like,
very constructively subversive of you. I love it.
Yeah. It worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I did crash into a lot of boundaries. I crashed into organizational boundaries. I had a lack of understanding for simple project management, and just crashed into a lot of boundaries because I didn't have the understanding of wider, bigger picture. I was just an agile developer. And the good thing was I did learn, and I realized, okay, this is me. I need to learn. I need to talk to people and develop some empathy and learn how what the work looks like from their side. So I did that. And then two things happened. Actually, three things. One was that it turned out I was better at talking to people than as a developer, or maybe more valuable. So people started to pay me for creating teams. Teams.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah. The other thing that happened was that my private little pockets of one team grew, and they grew over the years to the size of full companies, for example.
Oh, wow.
My playground and my pockets and the areas where I could do good moved from one team to many teams and entire organizations. And the third thing that happened was that I started Nomad8. And I started Nomad8 because I felt a bit lonely and I wanted to have colleagues, but I didn't want to run a normal traditional consultancy.
Mm. Can you summarize sort of Nomad8 for anyone who's not familiar with it listening in?
We are a consultancy, and we our purpose is to just sprinkle agile magic across the world.
And do you have like a big barrel of glitter in the back of your office? Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a shame there is no video in the podcast, but and we do anything that is loosely or closely related to agile. So that comes to core agile, to creating teams, getting groups of people to work as teams, running programs, helping organizations be more agile. And we do coaching, we do training, we do mentoring, and also do kind of adjacent fields that have become part of this big thing that we now call agile, the loose definition that come from product development, that come from leadership, and so on. So anything that's loosely related to agile is stuff we do.
Nice. Cool. And you mentioned that, you know, you started with these technical practices and XP, and someday, you know, the good stuff that Ken Beck came up with. And how do you think they are important right now? Because I find that we often don't talk about them almost at all, or very rarely. And often that's what I think is maybe missing in teams, or kind of this discipline of you know, continuous delivery, for example, on CI/CD and pair programming, unit testing. How do you think it's important in the current context?
I think we are a bit victim of our own success. And I think it's absolutely great that the parts of Agile that are related to our product management, to leadership, to our relationship and team building have taken off. And I think that's absolutely awesome. And I do think that the technical practices have fallen a bit wayside. Mm-hmm. I think they are so important because they enable all the other things, or they make it so much easier to be truly agile and to be really adaptive to changing requirements and changing world. And I think it's a huge shame that we have seem to have forgotten a bit about them because the attention was elsewhere. And it's one of the things that I want to do. And I've talked to some of my colleagues at the Agile Alliance board to bring some of those things back to bring the developers back into the fold, because I think we have lost them. And I think they're huge. Developers as people are hugely important to our community. And
like literally hugely important. Like how could they're almost everything, really.
I wonder if to an extent, you know, DevOps kind of took them over. You know, maybe we're too dogmatic about our kind of agile way of thinking and doing things, and DevOps kind of decided or was created, and people were like, oh, DevOps is more interesting, or CI/CD is more interesting, and we don't want to be part of this agile movement that is sometimes scary.
Yes, and I feel that by now it has almost become a branding question.
Mm, yeah.
I love DevOps, and I think a lot of things that are done in DevOps are coming from Agile or are an extension of Agile. Mm-hmm. At the same time, DevOps is looking into DevOps DevOps culture, which is exact same that Agilists are valuing. So I think actually they are super, super similar, slightly different focus, and there might be a branding issue or a terminology issue that the community wishes to get over it.
Yeah, yeah. When you think about the evolution of, you know, of team topologies, you know, the guys created first DevOps topologies and moved to team topologies. And when they talk about platform teams and they talk about using some of the product practices in product teams and so on. So it's almost like everything is mixing together.
And yeah. I think that's great. Like it's this, whatever we end up calling it, but it's this like a great thing that is now a mix of good things from a variety of fields. And personally, I call it Agile. Other people might call it something else. Mm. It'd be nice to agree on a name. But I think this is good because it's lots of good things.
Mm. So you mentioned you sort of started in 2003. You moved to New Zealand in 2006. You've been here since 2006. I've been here since 2009. And I know in my short journey here, I've seen the Agile community change and take some weird turns, take some unexpected turns. And I also look at it now going, there are parts of it I recognize very intimately, almost uncomfortably, like a parent looking at their child going, oh yeah, that is me. Not to say that I think of them as my child, but like you see yourself reflected in the community, like I've been on that journey. But also like the needs of businesses are actually changing because of a variety of things. One of them being, you know, Agile. Tell us a little bit, I mean, if you don't mind sharing with us, tell us a little bit about how you've seen the Agile community change. How is being an Agile coach changed? And what do you think is really needed for businesses right now? What do you hear? Because I know that you got your fingers in a lot of pies.
That's a wonderful way of asking three questions at once. Let me try to answer them as best as I can. And in the very old days, I'm talking 2006 to maybe 2008, 2009, it was you constantly had to explain what Agile was. Any presentation, anything you wanted to talk about, you had to spend the first 10, 15 minutes with a big Scrum picture on a slide explaining what it is, and then you could kind of get on. So yeah, there's lots of people where you had to define Agile as a, how this is not waterfall. And I don't remember the exact, and at the time community, where people who were early adopters, people who were open, there were lots of teams that were hidden within organizations that were not Agile. It was the time of let's have an experiment and see how that team works. That was the first phase. And I think after that came a bit more attention. There was, from a team perspective, there's this one team and it's working really well, but it only works in a web context. It only works for small projects. It only works for a big project.
I remember those conversations.
It works for everyone, but not for us. But like, and other people should change, but more awareness, but it's not for us. And more people joined the community, which was good, but I think more friction started to happen. And I think the next thing that happened was, and we're talking, find it hard with the years, but like maybe 2012, 13, starting to see some companies be interested in bigger or going more Agile as an organization. Those were the early adopters, and I think that worked well because we didn't have, there were no templates, there were no consultancies with templates. It was...
Yes. I'll just say that again. Yes.
Yes. Yep. And those were the times where I used to work with TradeMe and help them become more Agile. And it was pre-consultant, pre-McKinsey, that kind of stuff. And after that, what happened was that there was so much success that bigger, more traditional organization wanted to be agile. And because they had a different starting point, their understanding of what they could achieve with agile, how agile could be done, was different from tech companies. And that's when I think we started to see this whole, we need to scale.
Totally, and the big four totally met that need, right? Like they're like, oh, you need to scale? We can do agile. That's fine. We do restructures. We do transformation, digital transformations. We do this. We could do an agile transformation. It's no problem. You know, the agile, yep. It's what, like 12 principles, 4 values. We could do that.
Yes.
Yep. A couple books, you know.
Hard can it be without crediting anyone? But I do think what happens, it was a bit the victim of our own success. And it's, and to be fair, some of the people who did implement scaling or transformations had a business understanding that we don't have. They didn't necessarily have the agile understanding, but to be fair, we also lacked a lot of the business understanding.
Oh, I hear that. Yeah.
So they, what would have been wonderful was to collaborate with them. However, I have seen McKinsey and I think it is impossible to collaborate with McKinsey.
I too have found it difficult. That said, I mean, the people I've met generally I think are quite good, but there's a lot of training and a lot of structure that they have to sort of stay in the lines from that I think it makes it really hard to inject real life learning from your own community as to what's possible, what's safe, and what's meaningful into that sort of thing. So,
yep, absolutely. And it's not that every single person is bad or clueless or wants something that we don't want, and they have skills that we don't have. But I think the most of us coming from the agile community, we approach work with an attitude of collaboration, of trust, and doing what is best for our clients, and doing what's best for people and staff around us. And we are trying to create joyful workplaces where people are high performers but also enjoy their work. And I think that idea of collaboration hasn't always been met.
Do you reckon Nomad 8 might be like an anti-McKinsey? Or not? I mean, I shouldn't be focusing on McKinsey because there's like top four that are hugely influential right now in that sort of field.
I think so. I think absolutely. Like what we do is the opposite. We don't use a template. It is context specific. There's no best practice. There's a number of good practices, and we can together figure out which one is best or which ones are best for you. So I think we are. That being said, there's also things that we can't do or don't want to do. Like I wouldn't even know how to get rid of people or make everyone reapply for their jobs. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. Right. It's just something that we don't know how to do. And I don't
necessarily... I'm interested in being experts at it. Fair enough.
Back to your question, I think at some point there was this whole scaling and the transformation era, and what we saw after that, or what we saw there, was that it is not a template. It's actually deeper than the structures that many people see, and where people only see process and nothing else. And I think we're coming out the other end of that now. And seeing from a work perspective, there is quite a lot of companies where we come in when the big transformations have left, when they want to have value from how do we actually really make people happy? How do we really run great teams? How do we really achieve business agility rather than follow a process? And so I have great hopes that this was just a wobble on the way to true agility.
Yeah, nice. And I think maybe one example that comes to my mind to go back to how you approach things differently is is the radical collaboration in the form of self-selection. You know, some of the things you did at TradeMe and other places.
Yeah, that's literally insane, like in the best way. You have to talk about you have to talk about self-selection, team self-selection, and not only that you've done it like on a small scale, you actually do it on a large scale. Please talk about that.
And it's not insane anymore. Just for anyone who doesn't know what it is a way for people in an organization to choose which team they want to work in. And it's based on the assumption that people do the best work they the best work possible if they work on things they want to work on with people they want to work with. And instead of having a manager go, you go on this team, you're on this team, you're on this other team, people get together in one self-selection event and everyone works out together what is a good solution for the company. And it used to be absolutely insane because the first time we did this was in 2013 at TradeMe. And we were facing this exact problem that we were moving people around into teams and I thought, oh, great job. Only to come out and see that, okay, this person doesn't want to be there, people are whinging, this is not going to work. And then thought after a hackathon where people had managed to just pick who they want to work with on projects, like, no, I'm going to be on two teams or I'm going to do two things. People just managed to do that and realized, what if we could do this in real life? Stakes are higher, but what if we could people, what if people could just choose their own teams? And manage to create, and we can't just go like, hey, everyone, do this, that'd be chaos. So we developed a way of facilitating this in a safe way, includes preparation, facilitating this in the day. And we had success at TradeMe. And what happened then was that we blogged about it and people got interested. And then we wrote a book about it. And more people got interested and we moved from this is insane and has happened once to we have now, and people have done this internationally in big companies, small companies, in tech companies, in banks, in government and so on. So it has become a thing that is actually quite safe and people know it has a track record. And yeah, that was a really cool thing to have done.
Amazing.
That's so awesome. Yeah. But it's still insane, like not insane in the way that like you shouldn't do it or you shouldn't try it or you shouldn't approach it like, you know, respectfully in a safe way. It's insane because it's very ACT for most organizations I've worked with, completely disrupts the internal structure trying to support those people. You know, like it disrupts HR, it disrupts, you know, a manager's, you know, your E360 profile or whatever, your profile for your productivity and all these other things. Like it makes it so much harder. It doesn't actually in real life, but like all those structures, it goes against all these structures because those structures assume that you're going to be in one place that's predictable. And people panic when they hear like people can just be in a different part of the organization working with people that we didn't expect them to work with. And where's their manager going to be? Where's their tech lead going to be? And all those questions come out in that process of, I shouldn't say obviously, I assume because you've done this so many times, that's a familiar conversation to you, not an unfamiliar conversation to you.
It is absolutely familiar. I do avoid changing reporting lines though. Keep the same reporting lines so you don't have HR, but have stable cross-functional teams, like as stable as you can get them. And if you don't change reporting lines, it's already a lot less complex. And I believe if we did, then people would change their manager over their team. Yes. So we can get that out. It's just who do you want to work with? Manager stays the same.
It's almost like super, it's so easy, it's unimaginable.
Yes. And the other thing that that is really important is that it's not a once and done, because you do it and you do want to keep teams stable, but they never really are. There's always someone who most to Australia quits their job, whatever it is. So they're never 100% stable. Plus people, when you do this, people talk about how cool it is to be able to pick your own team. And then you have people join later and they join because of that, but they never get the chance. So my recommendation is to do this every 6 to 9 months, that people get a chance to pick their own team.
Yeah, nice. And you know, someone hearing you say all of these stories, they may seem, it may seem like, oh, it's so easy, but people may be scared to keep it go. Were you scared when you did it the first time?
People ask you, it's not, hey, we're going to do this tomorrow.
Yes.
So I start at least a month, even more beforehand, of what it is we want to do, why do we want to do it, what is going to happen, what is going to happen on the day, what's in it for you. And also, hey, you guys can do this, because I find when there's huge uncertainty and people are scared, I run a hackathon. And then already it's like, hey, guys, you're like 20% there. You just show that you can do this. It's not that different. You can do it. I trust you. We trust you that you can solve a problem on behalf of our company. So that trust and giving people confidence is super important. And you always have some people who really don't want to do this, who are super scared. And, and there's two options there. One is, hey, you're not signing your life away. If you get it wrong, it's okay. Then you have the next self-selection event coming up. Or if you really choose something and you absolutely totally hate it and you can't make it work, then have a conversation and we talk about it and see if we can move you somewhere else. We just ask you to give it a good shot. And there are all sorts of fears, and the process is usually to have this conversation as an all company presentation, then have one-on-ones, have make it possible for people to just have a chat, have an FAQ, because everyone has kind of the same questions, and just tell them again before you do it.
That's awesome.
What I do find interesting is that all the people appreciate it more. And by all the, I mean people who have been in the workplace for longer. They go and think this is amazing because they've never had that chance before. Whereas grads, I find very often think this is completely normal, not a big deal.
And they're like you in 2003. You're like, yeah, this is just the way things are.
Yeah.
they're exposed to the bubble.
It actually should be like that.
It should be. Yeah. So we could talk for hours. But you also have a really unique perspective that not a lot of people, particularly in this country, in New Zealand, have, which is you've seen the rise and change. You know, it's that whole Batman, that Batman thing where it's like, I'm not the hero you want, I'm the hero you need, sort of thing. You've seen the whole change of Agile as a way of approaching a problem, as a way of interacting with businesses, as a way of helping businesses, and as a way of enjoying life in a way. Change over the last well over 10 years, almost 20 years. And what do you see now? Like, for people maybe 2 to 3 years into an Agile, maybe they were part of a McKinsey or a Deloitte sort of transformation, and they were hired as a team coach or an Agile coach because they had potential. They were seen as having potential. They had good people skills. They didn't know anything about developing, but they had good people skills, and then now they're into it and they're getting it. And there's all this change in the market happening. And they're just starting to find their feet. What do you say to those people? They're at the beginning of their journey.
First of all, I say welcome to the community. I think it's great they're here. And all of us, when we start with some gaps. And they might have amazing interpersonal skills, and they might be amazing at some things. Just find out what are the things that they're not amazing at. And I find it useful to compare myself. If I look at someone who's an amazing Agile coach, then I think about, well, I can do this, I'm good at that, but I've got a gap here and a gap here and a gap there. So how do I learn that? And for some people, what I observe, it's some technical skills if they work with teams. Some people are business coaches, so they don't necessarily need to know that much about it. But they also, I think the whole being agile versus doing agile, we needed to pull it over from doing agile into being agile, because that was underrepresented. Nobody talked about it. So we talked a lot about mindset, and I think that was great in the context. And now we have overdone it maybe a little bit.
Almost too much mindset.
Yeah. Mindset is super important, but it's not all there is to it. You also have to know the other parts.
Mindset is there to develop experience, which is there to develop skills. And yeah.
Yeah, agree. Yeah. And there's some skill gaps, and I think people should happily fill them. And it's an exciting field. So that's it's great they're part of our community, and I'm happy to help them fill those gaps. In fact, I think if I think about what's happening in Agile in general right now, I think it feels a bit like the 1990s must have felt for the first Agilists. Because there is this whole change of everything. We got AI. We don't know if developers even exist years from now. AI, we've got sustainability topics. We have businesses having to be more agile. So we don't know exactly where we're going to end up. And there are some huge changes we need to adapt to. And I think there's they're huge risks, but also huge opportunities. And it's exciting. And I have not been there, but it's how I imagine it must have been in those early 90s.
That's fantastic. I'm just going to sit in that and think about where I was in the early 90s, and it wasn't anywhere in an office. So I can't empathize with that either, but I know what you mean. Like,
1992 for me, it's actually quite funny, because I was in 1992, I was at the Olympic Games in Barcelona, and they had those computer terminals everywhere. So you could just type something, and everyone had this email address in the Olympic Village, and you could send them a message. And I remember being there using that thing going, this is amazing, but it's such a shame that we can never have it in real life, because it's impossible.
So you got a preview to the 2000s, basically, in the early 90s.
Yeah, and decided it was impossible. It couldn't be done.
And here we are. Well, that's amazing. Gosh, I feel like we've covered so much. You've told us about New Zealand from, 2006 to now. You've talked about this amazing discovery that you've made with helping teams to reform within a business and all the benefits from it. Talked about all of your observations on, Agile as a brand and where it's come and where it's going and where you see it's going. Is there anything, before we sign off, is there anything you just want to say to any of our listeners that could be at any stage in their Agile journey?
I just want to say hi, and wherever they're at in their journey, they have come to the right place and to the right community, because I think it's a really awesome community. And it's a community that's both honest and kind, and we can have disagreements, and we can sometimes have really strong disagreements, and sometimes we come across as being fragmented in our tedious, petty little arguments. But overall, we're a tight-knit community, and we have way more in common than what separates us, and both in terms of experience and flavors of Agile. So I think we should all be really happy to be here, the new people, and anyone who's listening to that, be glad to be part of this community. We can make this really, really cool together.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, Jakob, that's another episode.
Oh, no.
Thank you so much, Sandy, for joining us and sharing your story. It's very much appreciated.